Initiate Cowrat Podcast.
In this episode, we want to talk about something that I think is very common to guys, and both of us have had a notable struggle or had to work through this scenario, so we figured this could be helpful to others. And so we're going to talk about what I'm going to call career disappointments, otherwise known as, I started out to go to school to do this because I really love this, but I wasn't able to work or stay working in that field, and I had to resort to something else.
And you had all the skills and then nowhere to use them.
Or with some level of evaluation, decided that what it cost you in terms of life situation to pursue it further was more than you wanted to pay, or maybe just in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
So I started out pursuing a career in audio engineering, and I got a 2-year degree in that, got a couple of industry jobs that were fairly short in duration, one after the other, and then kind of ended up in a slightly side rail in a retail hi-fi scenario installing car audio, then got married. And I didn't necessarily think of all the things in terms of risk assessment or wins or losses in going either way, but there are enough pluses, I'll say, to where I went as a result of my choices that I could see that it was probably a good thing, but still there's times of dealing with, I still really enjoy that, and I get to do it on Sundays for church these days, but you know, there's other levels of satisfaction from having other opportunities. And
I guess the podcast is kind of sort of another outlet for you for the audio.
It is.
It's not like a big thing, but
right.
And actually, now that we mention it, the podcast for me is kind of an outlet for my graphic design a little bit, doing the logo and the other little marketing or stuff we put on Facebook and for the podcast. So yeah, I've always loved drawing. I drew a lot when I was a kid. My dad always told people I was born with a pencil in my hand. I was just always drawing pictures. If we were on a car trip, I always had to have a stack of paper and pencil. And then in high school, took a computer art class. And I was like, this is the most amazing thing ever. I can draw, but then I can move things around and cut them and flip them and undo. I loved the undo button when I discovered that.
Yes.
In fact, there was one time after I had been using a computer for a long time to draw, I went back to drawing on a piece of paper and I messed up and I moved my pencil to the upper left of the page to hit file. Scroll down, undo. Like, just, it was out of habit. I'm like, oh, wait, that doesn't work. But I just, like, instantly fell in love with art on the computer. I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. And so went to college for that. Got a job at a software company, but they wanted me to do programming. This is the job I had that I mentioned the other day about licking the button.
Yes.
the previous episode. had that job for 10 years. I could do a little bit of kind of art and like layout, but there was a couple of graphic designers. That was their job, but they wanted me for the programming and whatnot. And like, okay, I guess I'll take the job.
Yeah.
And eventually I did move into the graphic side of it. One of them left the company. They picked me to take over for them, which I was very happy about.
Yes.
But then the company was having financial struggles. It was during the 2008 recession. I might have mentioned this on a previous episode, but they eventually had to let me go. But I had already started my own graphic design thing on the side just as some extra income. And when they let me go, I'm like, okay, I guess I'll take this full time. So I did that for 2 years, the most fun I ever had at a job, least amount of income I ever had at a job.
Yeah.
So yeah, I figured out I'm not a salesman, and eventually just felt the need to, I needed a regular paycheck from a boss. Another one of the issues was when I was my own boss, my boss just didn't crack the whip enough on me. That was an issue.
Slacker.
Right. And I found out that when you are the one guy trying to run the whole thing, I had to do the marketing and the finances and all that kind of stuff and try to figure out how to get sales and get clients and whatnot. So that was eye-opening. And that's when I learned why if your company charges $200 an hour to their clients, they might pay you $25 an hour.
Right.
That's the reason. All the other guys who are bringing the work to you and handing it to you so you keep busy, they need to get paid too.
Well, that's
plus,
right.
Plus pay the bills, and the boss probably wants to make some income off of it.
Yep, the guy who's risking all his money. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, point being, so I started looking for graphic design jobs. And one of the things I found was they wanted, a lot of the companies wanted graphic design and web programming and this. And it's like, I did the programming for this particular software, but it was fairly simple. And I wasn't into the web programming. I learned enough of it to get by, but I actually hired someone else to do that part of it anytime I needed them. And so I was like, I can't say that I'm a web programmer and take this job. And then, you know, so I just kept looking and I had to do something in the meantime and went from one bad job to the next. Some of them were terrible, the work, but just like factory jobs and whatnot and minimum wage. Finally landed where I am now, which is fairly decent pay, but it's not graphic design at all.
Right. Yeah, self-employment is not the panacea that some people might think it is.
Right.
I mean, obviously, tons of people do it, start out that way. A lot of people have been very successful. It definitely takes a mix of skills, at least at some level, to initially get going, because as soon as you start paying people to do portions of the job, you need that much more coming in to cover everything.
Right. And then now you've got to also be like a project manager or a general contractor. You got to manage these other people and communicate and get, you know, and pay people. And
and the bidding process. I know our friend Tim, who's a self-employed carpentry contractor, there's dealing with all of that, getting people billed so you can get paid, and then bidding jobs. So that takes time. You can't get a job unless you give somebody a bid so they know how much it's going to cost before they decide if they want you to do it or not. So not any of this to say anything against self-employment, but to understand it is a lot more work than what some people might envision having to go through to do it. Oh, I just want to be my own boss. Oh, there's a lot of pieces to it.
Right. And give it a try if you learn before you go into it as much as you can. One thing that I discovered was, you know, when you're working for somebody else, you punch out and you go home.
Yep.
And my current job, I don't have to give one thought to what my work when I'm off the clock. That's all I could think about day and night. I would wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't sleep and would just work.
Yeah.
It was better than laying in bed thinking about working.
Yep.
Because it's all on me and I'm not getting paid by the hour. They're not, like, every hour I put in, I get paid for. So that I did a lot of work that I didn't get paid for because I was trying to get sales and nothing came in. Well, then all that work never got paid for.
Right.
And I was always coming up with ideas and how to do some marketing thing. And, oh, another issue was I did, had some brochures printed up for a guy and the printing cost $500. And there was a mistake in the printing.
No.
And so I just threw those in the garbage and paid $500 out of my own pocket to reprint everything.
$500.
Yeah. I mean, $500, you know, it could be worse. But to me, for sure, at the time, I was like, well, this stinks. So that's the other thing is when you screw up at your big company you pay for, usually the company just eats the cost.
Right.
Dave Ramsey said, when you work for somebody else, you work whatever 8-hour period of the day they tell you you need to work. And that's your schedule.
Yep.
When you're your own boss, you can work any 16-hour period of the day you like.
Yes.
And yeah, that was definitely true.
That's a consideration, too, to realize that if you have other priorities in your life, if you're married, if you have children, and if you want a healthy family by the time you're all done,
yeah.
Time is a huge thing, and that's something that self-employment takes a whole lot of. Again, not to discourage, just to realize you need to assess your values to figure, can I fulfill what is valuable to me, taking any given route, whatever it might be, even if it's working a job for somebody else, but working third shift because it's got a $2 an hour pay differential.
Right.
There's one guy that we know that he talked about working third shift is a little easier to fit into everybody else's regular first shift life because you're awake in the afternoon. Second shift's probably the worst because totally shoots the evening and then goes into the night enough to wreck your morning. And
right.
So,
yeah, I actually did that when I first started where I am. I was second shift. So I'd start work at like 3 p.m. And yeah, any of the events in your kid's life or at church or wherever was always after work, you know, 6-7 p.m. during the week, you know, if it was something going on during the week. So I would just miss that. And they quickly moved me to overnights. So starting at 9 or midnight, somewhere in there, they kind of moved me around a little bit. But that was definitely preferable to sleeping in the evenings.
I could,
you know, sleep when everyone else was doing school or
it was
whatever.
Still had that end of the day going to have to go to work dread thing going.
That I didn't really appreciate. Right. And the other issue was trying to sleep during the day while your wife is homeschooling kids.
Yeah.
We made it work. But
live to tell about it.
Yeah, exactly. And then when they said, all right, there's a day shift open and you're next in line. And I was like, yes, yes, I don't need to hear anymore.
Right. I'm curious about other factors you may have been considering at the time, too, when, well, I know the mortgage was a huge impetus, too. It was like, okay, well, the fact is they got to get paid. They don't care about my ambitions. They need their money.
Yeah, exactly. Or they'll take the house. They don't really.
Yeah, either one.
They prefer the money, but they'll take the house.
But during that time, were there other things that you're working through in your mind as far as, I don't want to give up on pursuing graphic arts because that's what I love doing, or you never considered maybe moving to a location where there might be more jobs still doing graphic arts for somebody else, but that pay really well, or didn't because of family, church, whatever. Just curious some of the things you considered for that.
Yeah, couldn't really see myself moving somewhere else. And ever that really didn't much come to mind. My parents are here. Linda's parents are here. All our friends and family, obviously. And people move and they make new friends, I guess, but there was something about all my family being here that was a big deal. I don't know. Me personally, and I know it's a thing, it's a very common thing, but I personally have always felt this very weird to move far away for extra money. I don't know. I'm like, I'd rather be where my family is and where I grew up. And I don't know. And I mean, you know, my daughter's doing it now. They moved away because he's in the military. And so they're dealing with that. And they took them a little while. They found a church that they like now. And haven't heard much on this, but I'm assuming they're starting to make some friends. And
they know that that's a season for their life. That
yes. Yeah.
Even if he decided to, you know, he's active duty. So even if he decided to be more of a career military, that's going to mean more moving. But it doesn't necessarily mean always being so far away from where you guys are.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm slightly disappointed. If you guys are listening, think about me. It's that my kids all grew up seeing their grandparents all the time because they were in town on both sides. I just kind of always thought, all right, good. That's how my kids are going to do it. And then when she fell in love with a guy who's from town, I'm like, great, this is working. This is working. And again, if you're listening, just kidding.
Being a grandparent now, that's definitely something I see why it's such a factor for a lot of people. It's like, what sense does it make? I'll have to say it this way. Your priorities must be on something besides this, as far as being the most important, to retire or move a long ways away, and all your family, and especially grandkids, are all close to home where you originally came from. And so now they all have to travel to see you, or you always have to travel in order to see them. My personal values, I've thought that over and over. I thought, I see why people end up living in the same area that they grew up in and same area that their grandparents grew up in, because everybody just stayed in the same area so that they had that family connection.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I've always, even I can't think of a time in my life where I ever thought of not living in town here. And some people are going to hear that and be like, loser, you're just a townie. You're always stuck where you always were. Like, okay, sure. You do your thing.
Right. It has some features that are important to me.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Even having young kids and being motivated by got to pay the mortgage and all that, there's not a ton of time to be thinking about a whole lot of other things. But during those early years of the after leaving graphic arts, did any of that continue to loom? Do you think about wishing you could still be doing it?
Yeah, there's definitely times it comes into my mind. You know, when I first finally started working where I am now, they needed me like 60 hours a week or so, and I got overtime pay. So that was like, okay, the money problems are finally not a big deal to me right now. But I had these clients, the graphic design clients, that were still needing me because I just took the job, but I was still doing graphic design for some people. And so then all of a sudden I was working 60 hours a week at my regular job and trying to help customers. And that really stunk when working overnights, doing all this. It took me a little bit to realize I need to turn my phone off while I'm sleeping if I'm going to sleep during the time everyone else is awake. Because actually, a couple of times a client would call me, "Hey, Tim, got an issue with my website." I'm like, "What?" And they're like, "Did I wake you up?" And I'm like, "Well, that sounds real professional."
Right.
And I'm not telling people, like, "By the way, I have a job now and I'm working overnights." I didn't tell anybody that. So I finally realized, I'm like, I can listen to a voicemail and call people back. It's fine. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, point of all that is, like, the last thing I wanted to do was come home after working 10, 12 hours and do more work, sit down on the computer. So I was doing the bare minimum. I definitely stopped looking for more graphic design jobs, clients and whatever else. And I started handing off some work to other people that I knew who were either doing it full time or, you know, whatever, or on the side even. At some point, though, I just decided, I'm like, I don't know, I guess I'm just done with this, doing the freelancing, the graphic design. It's like, either I want a job or I'm not going to do it. And so then I started actively telling people, like, I'm getting out of the graphic design. You're going to have to find somebody else. Here's some people if you want to, you know, have them take over. But the part of the issue was I had started building up, because this was, at the time, was a great idea. If you're trying to get out of it, it makes it hard. But I really liked the idea of having a passive income. So yeah. I bought some hosting that was a set price, but I could have unlimited domains and web domains and storage for my clients.
Yep.
And so I was charging them monthly just to host their website. And so that was mostly all just private. Now, it was, you know, like, 10 or 15 bucks a month, you know, for one website. But obviously they'd pay me to do the work if it needed changes or whatever. But I was like, I had this picture in my head of, like, how many hundreds of people could I be getting $10 or $15 a month from, you know? Yeah. And if they go a stretch without needing work, then it's pretty much passive. So of course, when it came time where I was like, all right, I'm done with this. And then I had to get these people off.
Yeah.
Of course, they're busy, you know, running their businesses. And so at one point, I was trying to make a deal with this other lady who was doing her freelancing, that she would just take it all over for me. I would just give her the password, say, a debit card was plugged in for the billing.
Yep.
From me. I'm like, I'll just put yours in instead of mine. Just change the name and the email addresses and you just take over. And I'll just let people know this is who's taking this over. If you need something, call her, you know.
Yeah.
And she started looking into it, and be honest, I wasn't running it 100% professionally like I should have. I wasn't. She was like, how much is this guy paying? I'm like, I think I gave him a special deal for some reason. She's like, okay, like, what's going on? And then she backed out. She's like, never mind, I'm not doing this. I'm like, oh. Anyway, so it took a couple years, I think, before I was finally...
I'm free. Yeah, I'm free. Right.
So at first I was like, I wasn't like wishing I could still be doing it. I wanted to be done mainly because I was working so many hours at the real job that I got. But there've been times where if I'm talking to another graphic designer, let's see, a friend of mine does a podcast. They start up a podcast a little while before ours, and he showed me the logo and I'm like, and I wasn't going to say, I'm like, it's not my thing. He doesn't need unsolicited advice. But his logo just made me really sad to look at. I'm like, this is not a good logo, guys. And he had a friend of his do it who doesn't do graphic design.
Sure.
And so I just ignored it for a while. But I was excited. He had a podcast. He was excited, so we'd talk about it all the time. And I was listening to it. And finally, I'm like, okay, I have to say something. So I said, I just want to tell you something. No offense. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't like your logo. And maybe that was the wrong way to say it. Like, well, who cares if I like it?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, okay, so I'm like, what do you think of the idea of me coming up with a couple other designs and show you, and then I'll just drop it. You do what you want with them. And he's like, no, I'm not really interested in that. I'm like, all right. Now I just have to drop it and not bring it up again, or else I'm going to be a pest.
Yep.
That took me a little while to... finally get that out of my head and just let it go. But stuff like that, like, and one of the things I told him, I said, but this is coming from the opinion of somebody who was a professional graphic designer. like that would make him care.
I've done the same thing, sent unsolicited emails to some different podcasts I've listened to and said, hey, you looking for an audio guy to really polish your stuff at all? And Yeah, because I just couldn't take it. It's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You can do better than that.
So as I said in the previous podcast, there was definitely still glad to be done because I was working 60 hours a week and I just needed a paycheck and I was done with the money stress. And I was happy that was over. Yet there was still a part of me was like, okay, so is this how it has to be? Either I do what I love and I'm poor, or I run a mindless machine and don't use any skills and be able to pay the bills. Like, that was frustrating.
Yeah, can't have it both.
And I really did feel like I have these skills, like they're just going to wither and die if I don't use them. And I think they're worth money. And one of the things that I had learned from the first job I had out of college doing the programming graphic design, I was also doing video editing, animations. And they essentially, it was Adobe Flash they were using at the time.
Yep.
That is dead now.
Right.
Nobody uses that anymore. But I'll brag a little bit, I got pretty good at it. I got good with the programming part of it. I got good with the animation. And when they first started using Adobe Flash, they said, Tim, we want to use this. We think it's better than what we're using now. But nobody here knows how to use it. You got to learn how to use it and teach the rest of us. I'm like, okay. That was kind of fun. I'm like, I'm important. Yeah. And I'm getting paid to learn how to use this. And I thought it was a fun software. And I found out real quick, like, if I wasn't trying to do something, I could just Google it.
Yeah.
And especially with the programming language side of it. I programmed stuff that they could, like, reuse with other projects. And so then I kind of came up with the format of how we were going to use this software for what we were doing. And I came up with things that to save time. And then when I stopped working there, I never used it again.
Right.
And that really bothered me. It wasn't even like, I didn't use it in my graphic design. I used it a little bit with some marketing, you know, to promote my graphic design company. And that bothered me. And I did a couple of fun little animations with my kids one time. I had them record stuff and I would do an animation to it and whatever. But that was just for fun at home. But that bothered me for a while. It's like, I took how many years to gain all these skills with Adobe Flash? And yeah. Now I couldn't use it if I wanted to.
Right. I guess I would say I probably had a bigger struggle with really wanting to do the audio thing, but wasn't willing to pay the price as far as moving or what it meant for the family or any of these kinds of things. And one thing that really helped me, and I listed this in some of my favorite things in our special Christmas episode about the Stage Right with John Thorne podcast, him interviewing all these people who did the music business for a living. I mean, both from a musician side and from a production side, and no comment on their choices or if they're satisfied with where they ended up after all of that with their families and everything. But listening to some of the sacrifices they had to make, I feel better about the choices I made for me personally, knowing what it would have cost. I remember this one moment distinctly in vocational school going, I want to do front of house sound for Petra. But it wasn't the super deep burning passion, because the guys with that are usually the guys that end up there. They're motivated. And like you said in the thing about the advice for people going to college and stuff, it's like they don't need it because they've got the desire and the drive to do it anyway. And they're going to do whatever it takes.
Right.
That wasn't me. There's so many aspects of the things I did in vocational school and the first couple of audio jobs I had afterward that I really miss. And then technology has shifted so much. It's not that I think that analog gear necessarily sounds so much more amazing than the digital counterparts, but there was something really classy about all the VU meters on a multi-track tape deck. I'm sorry. There's just a lot of aspects like that. So it's a combination of, and I don't just call it nostalgia. I mean, I legitimately really think it looked elegant. I had to work through a number of things, and one of the milestones in that I'd mentioned in a previous podcast about a friend of mine, we visiting the town I went to the vocational school in, and him making the observation that my torment I felt with it didn't have anything actually to do with the location, but it was that season of my life, the way things went and the things I missed. That was helpful, but again, that was all related to the same place where I got my education. Then I've made a couple trips up to there since, to the school. And this last one, I knew, okay, this is the last one. This is not healthy. Healthy people don't do this. So I'm going knowing that this is it. I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to take a bunch of pictures of stuff. And they had actually moved the program from that location to one of the other technical colleges in the state. So it was kind of in a little bit of disarray. So I took my pictures and it's like, okay, I know I got to move on from this. This was about an hour drive home. And on the way home, I just started feeling this and seeing these thoughts form in my mind about the keepsakes, I'll call them, from that era when I was doing audio, when I worked for the small recording studio I worked for a while. So I had a 1-inch 16-track reel of tape that I had some original songs that I did on. And so I had all those old analog tapes. And I had not stored them in a way that they would necessarily be digitized successfully. And I'd waited way too long to do that. And I thought, well, it doesn't matter. It's still, it is what it is. You don't see these anymore. So I'd held on to those, but they're stashed away in a closet. And it's not like I'd go look at them every so often. And there's a time or two I thought about it. It's like, well, would I want to hang like this one on my wall, the 1-inch? Because 99.999% of the population has never seen a reel that big. So I'm driving and I'm getting this thought. It's like, if you're really letting go of it, then you need to throw those away. It's just one of those kind of like the Abraham and Isaac sacrifice thing where it's like, there's nothing wrong with them, but the place they have in your heart and in your mind, and you're thinking about the importance of that world that you're having a hard time letting go of. If it's really not that big a deal, if you're really wanting to be free from feeling the draw of that in an unhealthy way, you should probably throw them away. So that one time you and I were talking, you were talking about, you know, actually it was the Wednesday night. I had gone to the school that day, and then I invited people to come pray as I kind of explained some of this. And you said that your son about the, well, if it's not a really big deal, then give it. But it struck me. I'm like, yeah, exactly. If it's not a big deal, then it's not a big deal. So what's the problem? That was a big deal. And for me, the thing that I saw in my life in going through that evening with people in prayer was that basically I'd been walking through my life backwards, meaning I was moving in the direction of the future, but I was faced the other way. So everything was always in reference to the past. I just saw that in that moment and realized, okay, yeah, I need to turn around, face forward. And like the episodes we've talked about, the Carpe Diem, about him seize the moment. You have to be facing forward to do that.
Right. Yeah. I kind of had a similar experience kind of when I first got a job. You know, like I said, then I started doing like the bare minimum of what I needed to do to help my clients that I still had with the graphic design stuff. And I had a workspace and I had a computer and I had my, you know, file cabinet with stuff and business cards and whatever. And I don't remember exactly, but that just kind of got left and I just didn't touch it. And finally, sometime later, whatever it was, eventually I was like, well, I got to clean this space up. I'm not using it anymore. There's stuff sitting around that I haven't touched. Like, well, what am I going to do with this stuff? Like, throw it away. And I'm a little bit of a pack rat, so anything that's a thing that I own, like, well, throw it away. Why would I do that? It's mine. Why shouldn't I keep it?
I might need that.
Yeah, exactly. But really, the big thing was, like, the business cards that I designed and printed for myself, you know. And I had this box of them left, and I'm just, like, looking at them. I'm just sitting there, like, I guess I don't need them anymore if I'm not going to do this. Yet, I didn't want to just toss them in the garbage. They're brand new. They're shiny. They still look nice, you know. And it was kind of a reminder of what I was doing with my graphic design business. And then at the time, back far enough, in my head, this was like going to be my lifelong career, being a freelance graphic designer. And I was going to get more and more clients and start charging more money. And it was going to grow. Might have employees someday. And
it symbolizes the death of a dream.
Right, exactly.
And that was the aspect I saw too. It's like, this symbolizes where you had hoped to go and where you started out to go legitimately, but it's not anymore.
Right. And so it wasn't like the biggest struggle of my life, but I remember sitting there just holding them in my hand, just looking at them. Like, what do I, the obvious thing is to throw them, yet I'm not doing it. I'm just sitting here. So, and eventually I was like, all right, I guess I don't need them anymore. So I tossed them. Part of that, along with the, you know, letting go of the dream that I had of being a graphic designer, also, I thought it was going to make me, I don't know if I want to say rich, but not have any more money problems. I would have, eventually I would learn how to become a good salesman, become a good at the marketing, and get big clients who are paying a lot of money. And that part was just as much, possibly more of a struggle, like, and the prestige of being, you know, a business owner. And One part that I did like about helping my clients is when they were impressed, like, wow, that looks so good. And I'm just like, yes, yes, bow down to me. There's a little pride in there, I guess. But But then when I went to running this machine that any 18-year-old can do, because you have to be 18 to work there. Like, I'm sure a younger guy could do it. And again, it takes one night to train you in. Like, it's just not that prestigious. People aren't impressed when you're doing something that takes one day to learn. So that part was frustrating, you know, thinking that I should be better than this. I should be in a higher position. I should have more prestige. Whether it's graphic design or something else, you know, that, like, how can I be this old and I'm at the bottom now of this company that I just started at? And you know what I mean? I felt like it's the bottom rung of the... So one thing that I have often thought is, well, what the heck? I went through all this. I went to school and I did this graphic design stuff. And now I'm at this company that at the moment my plan is this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to retire from eventually. Yet I started there about 10 years ago and I'm 45. So yeah, I was about 35-ish when I started there. And I thought, you know what? If I could go back in time, I should have just started there when I was 18. Don't even go to college because you don't need college for this job. And I'd be close to retirement by now. And so I kind of kick myself. It's like, obviously, I would never have thought to do that back then. You know, I was doing what I wanted to do, whatever. So part of me is like, well, you can't be upset. How can you see 30 years into the future? That's silly. But yet this thought is like, I feel like it's a lot of wasted effort and years. And now I'm starting over, you know, if you want to talk about career path. But a friend of ours, David, said that one time he asked God, he said, God, if I hadn't, you know, wandered away and backslid and resisted obeying you, and for all those years, where would I be now? Like, my spiritual maturity and my closeness to you, where would I be now if I hadn't gone through all that? And God told him, you'd be exactly where you are right now, because those were the things that I used to get you where you are now.
So King Solomon weighs in on this subject of woulda, shoulda, coulda, or wish we could go back, and that whole thing. In Ecclesiastes 7, verse 10, he says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. So a movie that I saw probably 20 to 25 years ago called The Rookie, which is a true story about the life of Jim Morris, who ended up getting his dream shot at being a pitcher for the Texas Rangers in Major League Baseball. But he started out, I think he got as far as the minors maybe when he was, you know, 18, 19, 20, and injured his shoulder. So then he went into teaching high school science and did that for some period. And he also coached the baseball team. And the catcher commented to him all the time. It's like, I got to ice my hand after practice every time. It's like, you are bringing it way harder than you think. So they made a deal with him. It's like, you need to go try out. And he's like, okay, if you guys win, I can't remember what level they had to win to, if it was regional or state or whatever it was, I'll go find somebody to try out with. So they did. And he went and tried out. I think it was for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, and he was throwing a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Very few guys that can throw that fast. So they picked him up, and not long after that, the Texas Rangers picked him up as a relief pitcher. And I think he put in just a few years there, but he got his shot, a second chance at doing what his dream was, which was to play baseball. And watching that movie, I mean, this, like I said, this is 20 or 25 years ago when I was a lot deeper in dealing with this issue. It just shook me. I remember crying watching that movie, just thinking about what if I had a second chance to do what I set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not, you know, King Solomon says that's not wise to inquire about the past in that way, but it was, you know, that was very early in the process of trying to work to be living here in the moment, carpe diem, seizing the moment, not thinking about yesterday, not being bogged down by yesterday.
Right, yeah. So that reminds me, delving off of career discussions just into other things, but when I was young, I wanted to learn piano. And my parents had got me this little tiny toy keyboard, and I really had a lot of fun with it, and they saw musical talent in me. I like just figured out how to play some songs on my own, nothing like real complex. And I was like, yeah, watch this. I figured out how to play this. And then shortly after that, they went and bought me, it wasn't a full 88 size, but the little one I had, the keys were small. You know, they weren't the real size of a real piano keyboard. So they bought me a bigger one. It was nicer sound quality and whatever. And I had a lot of fun messing around with it. And eventually I said, I want to take piano lessons. a lot of parents tell their kids, you're taking piano lessons, you know. But I went to them and said, I want to take piano lessons. And so by that time, there must have been a gap in there. And so I was driving myself to piano lessons, I remember. I don't remember how long I did it. A year, I don't think it was two, maybe it was two. So eventually, though, I found the reading of the sheet music to be difficult and hard to learn, which I think it is. And I'm sure if I stuck with it, be great at it by now. But but not only that, I just got interested in other things and I didn't feel like practicing anymore. So eventually I quit and didn't really think much of it at the time. But since then, I've wished that I had stuck with it. And well, back was talking to somebody at church who plays keyboard on Sunday mornings. I forget the whole conversation, but that came up that I wished I had stuck with keyboard. And she said, well, you should pick it up again. I'll teach you. And immediately I thought was like, it's too late for me.
Yeah.
I'm too old. I don't have enough time. And the big one is I'm just going to quit again because that's what I do. And partly it's different because, you know, she said, well, I'll teach you chord playing. That is completely different than sheet music. You don't need to learn to read sheet music.
Yep.
You just need to learn if it says C, where's the C on the keyboard? If D, where's the D on the keyboard? That's all you got to know. And it was like, and I thought about it for a while, but that's still that big thing in my head was like, I'm just going to quit again. And it's just, what's the point in starting this late in my life? It's, you know. And but eventually I said yes, and this was 4-ish years ago, and I am so glad I did. Yeah. I've stuck with it. I definitely think a big part of it is the chord playing is so much easier than the sheet music. So like, for example, I'm not going to play something Bach wrote. I'm just not going to do that.
Right.
Got to learn to read the sheet music. Or you got to be a savant that can just hear it and play it. There are people who can do that.
Yeah.
But I'm neither of those. But one of the things... And that she has pointed out, like, she took 9 years of traditional classic piano lessons and can read the sheet music and all that. But once she learned chord playing, she's like, this is so much more fun.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely something to being able to play a song that some, you know, professional song that someone wrote and put it to sheet music. But one of the nice fun things about chord playing is there's almost no rules on it. It tells you to play a C chord, but you can play it.
Play an inversion.
You can play it soft. You can play a different inversion of it. You can play it in a high octave. You can play it in a low octave. You can arpeggiate it, or you can just hit it. And you just do what you feel like doing in the moment with all of that.
Yep.
And it's way more fun, I think.
Well, the other thing you probably had going at this time in life is you really felt like you had a purpose for it. I mean, it's fun to be able to do. It really is a great way for personal enjoyment to be able to play, but it was also had a greater purpose than just doing these lessons and doing this stuff on the sheet. And
Right, yeah. So anyway, point of all that, how it relates, is sometimes it's not too late.
That's right.
You know, and... Might I ever do graphic design again and start my own business again? Who knows? Maybe when the kids are gone and grown up and gone and the money thing isn't an issue if that ever happens.
Yeah.
You know, and I might have more time. Maybe I'll do it on the side again. I don't know. I don't have any plans to, but that's not really the point that I'm making is that sometimes it's not too late for whatever you're thinking about.
Yeah. If you're still breathing... And the body parts you need to do it still work. You can possibly get there.
Yeah. There's a Facebook page that I joined that's called The Piano Room. And so people post videos of themselves playing piano or ask questions about piano or whatever. And there's fairly often, like, somebody will put on there, like, I'm 70. I've been learning piano for a couple years now. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
If they can do it, I can do it.
I was talking to a local music store owner who happens to have he and one of his grandsons do gigs together. And his comment was that his grandson didn't ask for a guitar until he was like 19. Hmm. And he's like, turns out he was a musician and he didn't know it.
Yeah, right. Another thing I kind of wanted to touch on is what things have helped let go of the past where it needs to happen and get to the point where you...
can get at peace with it.
Yes, yeah.
It really is. First, you got to want to. And a lot of that is the grace of God to even consider the possibility, to even consider, I'd be willing to go that down that way. I'm willing to let go of this nostalgic tie to the past that has a certain kind of familiarity to it, but ultimately it's unhealthy.
Yeah, there's pain with it because it's...
yeah, it's just nagging. And so grace of God to have initiative to even consider the possibility, then seeking out prayer for it. And I know, even though it wasn't directly addressed in some of the different SOZO prayer sessions that I've been in, I know that just getting free and clear from other things, I mean, it just kind of all piles up. And to some extent, one thing affects another just because it's you. It's affecting your how your soul operates, your mind, your will, and emotions. But the biggest things have been, like I said, that trip I took up there with my friend, and he... And I believe it was Holy Spirit that put the thought in his mind to say, you know, maybe it's not this location. It's that time in your life, which totally got me thinking on a trail I hadn't thought of before. Mm-hmm. And I got a measure of resolution at that time that stayed. You know, that was 23 years ago. And some of the more recent ones, it's like when you get free a little bit and you realize how good it feels to not feel that unhealthy nagging and those things that they're destructive. It's all they do is make you think about the past and you can't be here and now and you don't want to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get a little bit of freedom from that, it's like, okay, this has got to go. And you start participating in asking God, not just passively, him sovereignly acting on you, which that's happened to me too. Way back where he just shows up and shows you this thing here. It's like, that's actually not true. You're not that. You're not bad like you think on this point here. That's not you. To actively asking him on a specific thing and praying with people about it, asking to see it change, asking God to reveal, just to show you in an instant, you can see a simple thing to realize, oh, I forgot about that. That's what happened. And you see some little thing that was traumatized you and you don't realize that it did.
Hmm.
But the main thing is if you have any inkling at all, it's like, I'd like life to be different. Pray.
Yeah.
And find others to pray with you.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the John Eldridge books were kind of helpful in different ways because they just make you think about things you don't normally think about. And that's a lot of it is you get stuck. You are who you are. You think how you think. And unless you take other input from the outside, ideally godly input, truthful input, you can't think any other way. And so reading things like Wild at Heart or Fathered by God can help cause you to think about things that you just never have that might unlock some of these things.
Yeah. Little side note, but that reminds me of a C.S. Lewis. He said, and I forget the exact quote, essentially he said that, so not only can a person be stuck in their own thoughts and their own viewpoint and find it hard to break out because they don't even know they're stuck in it. You
right.
know, they think this is the way it is.
Right.
He said, but an entire culture can be that way. Like the things that our culture thinks are important to talk about and what's wrong with our culture and how what we should be doing and what's the right way. Like, we're all hearing from each other, but nobody else. Nobody out with a different viewpoint.
The big echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah. We all live in a big echo chamber. Now, obviously, there's often two sides to every issue, and we all fight. But all we hear is what we think are the dumb arguments from the other side and what
yep.
and the people who agree with us, you know. But there are lots of issues where an entire culture sees something a certain way. So his point was, he said, it's very good to read old books.
Yeah.
And not just the Bible, but... Because every generation has a way that they see the world that might not be right in certain ways or fall into certain errors and the whole culture goes in it together.
Yep.
Because if everybody else is doing it, then it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
And we all influence each other. And he said, but if we can get a perspective from a different time.
Yeah.
See, that might highlight something in our generation where we're
right.
not seeing something correctly or whatever.
And having some of the people, you know, from Salt and Light, from over in Europe come, and our pastor having gone to Africa and a couple of other places, it's like, it's real easy to see in a different culture when you go there. It's like, whoa, what is that? It's real easy to see from the outside, see something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we're blinded. We're in that echo chamber. And so getting the input from people who, especially culturally, who are from a totally different culture, they got their own things. So don't get offended thinking, well, they got issues too. Yes, they do. But they can help you see your issues.
Right.
And your issues are what you need to worry about.
So for me, you know, I feel like my struggle has been different than yours. You know, this hopes and dreams for my career that I had that didn't go the way I wanted. I think a big part of it is realizing that, first of all, everything I have, everything I need, and everything that I want is going to come from God. this prestigious job is really nothing in the end. And I remember having this thought, before the fall, what was it like?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, yeah, there wasn't a culture of in big cities and people doing different jobs and stuff. But I'm thinking, like, well, if nobody had ever sinned, you know, I mean, so food was more readily available, you know, after the fall. God said, now you're going to have to work by the sweat of your brow to make the food grow from the earth and whatever. So there was some aspect of, I don't know, it's like they could just find food everywhere without trying.
Yeah.
But they were in unbroken communion and fellowship with God. Let's just say that had continued. And now we have major cities, and I mean, who knows what kind of technology we'd
right.
have and how far things would go. But nobody has this selfish pride and arrogance because, again, there's no
right.
sin.
Right.
This whole thing of trying to have this prestigious job wouldn't exist.
Right, exactly. Yep.
So essentially this, like, trying to, you know, this feeling bad that I'm on the bottom rung or wishing I was on the top rung, like, that's all meaningless and nonsense anyway.
Well, and we haven't touched on the fact that we live in America, so we're talking about that in relationship to American culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we compare it to the people living in the bush in Africa and lots of other places in the world. You know, we are in like the top 1%
You're
of
right.
all yeah. the things that we have access to, the options we have.
Uh-huh.
It's like we, yeah. we really have no idea.
Right. Of course, all I can see is what my neighbor has. Yep, I'm not looking at some guy in another country.
Yep. And I can't necessarily just drop everything and move over there because that'll somehow be better. It's
right.
It's the human condition, but it is somewhat relative.
Yeah. I have had thoughts, though, of like dealing with taxes and insurance and government junk. Like, maybe I do just want to live in a mud hut. None of this would be a problem.
No, then you got to worry about warlords and things like that.
And wild animals and disease. And So I remember another distinct time, and I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast, coming across the scripture, I have learned the secret of being content in every situation, whether rich or poor, whether well-fed or hungry. I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me. And what stood out to me was, I have learned to be content.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, maybe that's what I need more than a job that I like better or more money or more free time or whatever. I mean, obviously, you know, there's nothing wrong with increasing your income and saving for the future and bettering yourself financially. But, and again, you know, godliness with contentment is great gain.
Yeah, if you have both, yeah.
You know, if you can work on your finances, work hard, save money, pay the bills, invest for the future and all that without having this desperate grasping for more.
Yes. Yes.
More of this material world.
Yep.
But say I'm doing this
to be prudent.
Yeah, I'm doing this to be prudent. If I'm having constant financial struggles, I can't help anyone else. All
right.
I can think about is myself. If I can free up money and time to help others, that's a good thing. I don't feel like I'm that great at that kind of thing. But there's definitely been times where I've been able to help people in a way financially that, like, that's kind of a lot of money. But it's like, you know what? But I'm fine. I'll be fine without it.
Right.
You can't do that when you literally yep. don't know where your next meal's coming from.
Yeah.
And again, not to put people down who are in that situation. But point being, you got to find this balance of, you know, don't overspend, save for the future, don't go in debt, invest, increase your income, work overtime if you have to. But focusing on God being your provider. And God being the provider of your joy and satisfaction in life, not money.
Yes. Yeah. Gratitude is a huge thing, an exercise in going over saying, God, I'm thankful for this. I'm thankful for this, for the things you do have, because that's a trick of the enemy, too, is just simply get you looking at what don't I have and totally forgetting about what you do have.
When I came across that scripture, I changed from praying, God, give me more, to God, help me learn to be content. That definitely started me on learning to be more content.
Right.
Even though I was still trying to increase my income and get a better job and all that.